on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with Jim Kitchen of Fresno, California, originally from Hichita, Oklahoma. He served on the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Taney during World War II. That ship is now a museum in Baltimore, Maryland. And if you visit it, you can find a tool, a smoothing plane he borrowed for 61 years before he returned it. We touched on that story, and we might hear some more later. But let's talk about what you did on that ship during the war. What was the role of that ship, and what are some of the experiences that still stand out in your mind? Because it wasn't just all a picnic for you. I know you enjoyed your time in the Coast Guard, but there were some times that certainly got your attention and raised an eyebrow or two. What can you tell us about that?
I enjoyed what I was doing, and I didn't realize the danger I was in. But we went to the East Coast, went up to Portland, Maine, and damage control inspection. They just got through working on it, but that was the skipper's home, so I guess we just made a little trip up there. 'Cause he was on liberty and didn't come back that night until the next morning. Well, anyway, we went back down to New York for 2 weeks and went to Norfolk, Virginia, and picked up a convoy. And I'm not sure how many ships it was, but I've been told 140, but it was a pretty large convoy. I think there was 15 escorts, and we had a Navy officer, I don't remember his rank, but we were the flagship of the convoy. And we went to North Africa, and we went through the Mediterranean after Gibraltar went by Algiers. It was named Coffin's Corner because that's where the Germans hit a lot of the convoys going into North Africa. And the torpedo planes hit us that night. There's one ship that had bombs, detonators, and 550 soldiers on it, and it was torpedoed, and it went up like an atomic bomb. There was three of our escorts, I think, that went down that night, and a couple others were damaged and had to get towed in. And we had two torpedoes shot at us and missed. So we went on with the convoy and to Bizerte, Tunisia.
And let me interrupt, because I'm wondering, as you're describing this, some of the destruction that's happening around you and the fact that your ship was targeted as well, where are you while this is going on, and did you have any idea what kind of danger you were in?
Well, that was my first trip out, and I was down in the magazine room on gun one. When that ship exploded, and all the openings coming down there were small because the powder and the 5-inch projectiles went up to the gun. The concussion when that ship blew up, it was about a mile away, they told me. You could feel it coming down. But I didn't know any torpedoes had been shot at us, so we were just sitting down there waiting.
But you could feel things were shaking a little bit.
We felt it when that ship blew up, yes.
And when you found out later the significance of the damage, did that get your attention?
Well, no, it really. I mean, it happened, and I felt bad about the ship blowing up and all those people that went with it. It's disturbing, but I guess we were young and just didn't pay any attention to it. The deal is this. We didn't take the ships all the way in. We went to Bizerte, Tunisia, and we stayed there 30 days while they took them all in and unloaded. And when they brought the ships by, we escorted them back to the States. And we'd go in, like, to Boston. We'd had 2 weeks liberty there. But while we were in Bizerte, we were there 30 days, we would go down to where everybody went swimming that come in there and enjoy our time there. And some of the fellows were selling their T-shirts for $20 a T-shirt, their shorts, everything, and have to get clothes when they got back to the States. And so that was the first trip, so I never did sell any, but I got an idea that I wanted to make a little extra too, so I went to the Five and Dime store and bought all the lipstick they had, 10 cents a stick. And the lady says, oh, I know you sailors, anything for a good time. Well, we went back another trip to North Africa, and I proceeded in trying to sell my lipstick. But the Marines were there, and they were searching everybody as they went through. And I had these tied up in a sack in my swimming trunks, and he looked at me, and he says, go on by. And I says, oh, boy, when I sell this, this is it. I quit. And so I went down to the beach, sold all my lipstick for $3 a stick.
The lipstick salesman of North Africa. We can just end the show right there. That's a great note. And those are some of the lighthearted memories you have from the war. I know there were some moments, too, that weren't so much fun, that weren't all laughs and giggles. When you think back on the moments where you felt in danger, What are the ones that really stand out for you?
When we were in Okinawa.
What were you guys doing there?
We had an admiral aboard, and I was talking to one of my other shipmates, and he said he was on the bridge all the time, and he said we were third in charge. After three trips to the North Africa with the convoys, they put our ship back in the shipyard in Boston and converted us and took the four guns 5-inch off that they'd just put on a year earlier and made us into a communication ship. And that took 6 months. And we were to hit Iwo Jima. And we had the Marines aboard, ready to go, but it was too late because it already started. And so we let the Marines off. And anyway, in Okinawa, I guess it's just one time, it was nighttime. We'd been at general quarters several times, but we had left Okinawa to go to there was a few miles over. It was a lot of little islands there, kind of protected, to get supplies. And a Japanese fighter plane came through the harbor, and he must have done a barrel roll, and just the sound of the engines made my knees get weak.
Where were you on the ship when this was happening?
Oh, I was sitting back on the aft deck just looking around.
So you saw this Japanese plane and...
No, it was dark and you couldn't see it. It just made the noise. This is at nighttime.
So you heard it and that got your attention a little bit.
Just the roar of the engines when they like you do a barrel roll. And it just, I don't know what it did, but never fired a shot or dropped a bomb.
But that wasn't the only time there was a plane headed toward your ship. Okinawa is infamous for the amount of kamikazes in and around that battle. And your ship became a target for one of them?
Yes, we had a plane come in. It was raining, and he came in, and he's coming down our starboard side, and we started shooting at him all the way around, and he got to the port side, broadside to us, and I was the trainer on the gun. I run the gun fore and aft, you know.
Yeah, explain to us how that works. Most people listening have never been on a ship with a gun like this. It takes more than one person to make this gun work and actually have it do what it's supposed to do.
There is a trainer and a pointer, and the trainer runs the gun around and the pointer up and down, and he pulls the trigger. And then we have ammunition handlers, and then we have projectile and the hot shellman. He catches the brass container when it comes out and throws it away.
And how big are these projectiles?
It's called a 5-inch 38. The projectiles are 5 inches, and they're about 16 inches long, and I'd say the powder can was about 30 inches, so it did make quite a noise.
Yeah, quite a noise, pretty heavy to handle, and obviously can do a fair amount of damage. So you said you're the trainer on this gun, so it's your job to aim this gun side to side.
That is correct, and there's pointers. It's coming from radar that we have to follow. It's kind of fun to do it. If the ship is rolling, you learn just to roll with the waves and keep it there.
Yeah, easier said than done. So, but I imagine it gets pretty tense. I mean, firing that gun in practice is one thing, but when there's a plane heading your way that could crash into your ship and do a whole lot of damage, then this isn't fun and games anymore. Do you remember how that all happened, what it felt like, and how it unfolded?
Well, you know, we were just young kids. They were so many of them they were picking out the larger ships. I saw 9 ships get kamikazes in one day. We were hoping that they'd get close enough that we could shoot at them. But then if we did, we had to help the gunner's mates clean the gun up, the barrel, wash it out, oil it.
And can you maybe help us understand how difficult this is with the plane moving that fast at the altitude where it is? With, you know, having to have this teamwork on the gun, how difficult it was to actually shoot one of these guys down?
Well, it was just luck, because radar tells you how fast they're going and the altitude they're going. And for a plane to be coming down about, say, 300 miles an hour, and you're going to put a projectile in that gun and set the fuse setting that it will go off whatever you set it for, like 2 seconds, 2,000 feet. And with a plane coming down, and then the time that you get all that information and put it in, and it explodes right in front of him, and he rolls over and crashes into the water. It's just, how do you do it?
And you kind of stated that like it's a hypothetical, but that's what actually happened. That's what you guys were able to do to take out that kamikaze.
That is correct. Okay, I'll tell you what I said then. When I stopped moving the gun, and I just sitting still, I knew something was wrong. I looked up and I saw the plane coming down on us, and the pointer was Tex, And I said, Tex, if you ain't had the pointers matched, get them matched, because he's coming in. And the gunnery officer must have heard me. It was open mount gun. And he was kind of standing behind me. So he went around and put that 2-second fuse setting on it. And when that one went off, it exploded right in front of the plane. And it crashed in the water 1,000 feet behind us.
What do you think would have happened if that fuse hadn't been set like that? If it hadn't, if the points hadn't been matched up, if it didn't explode right when and where it did?
Well, if it hadn't, it looked like he was looking down our gun barrel. And I wouldn't be here today, but I don't know. The ammunition handlers, they got scared and run forward, but I sat there and I don't know. I didn't. But when I saw the explosion in front of him, I sure felt good, though.
I don't want to exaggerate here, but it sure sounds like you're saying for you guys to put that shell right there and have it explode right there was a bit of a needle in the haystack. And if you hadn't found that needle in a haystack, then y'all would have been dead.
That is correct. I feel that way. We wouldn't be here right now talking.
And I'm not trying to be melodramatic or get you to say anything that you don't really feel. But when you think about that moment, because that's significant to me, and I've interviewed so many veterans who have moments like that, how do you account for that, the fact that it happened just that way and you're still here talking to me right now?
Well, you know, I never thought about it after I went home, and I haven't talked about it much until here just the later years that we've had so many reunions with my shipmates, got together and got to talking and realized what really happened.
So you guys shot down a kamikaze, but that wasn't the only thing that was shot down by your ship. And sometimes it was hard to know who was coming at you. You guys actually shot down an American plane, is that right?
Yes. It came over the island the same way as the first kamikaze that we shot down, and they wouldn't identify themselves. So after they got in over the ships that were anchored in there, we shot him down. After we shot that one down, then a two-motor Betty bomber was coming in just over the water, real close, and it got within 1,000 feet of us before the forward guns knocked it down, and it cleaned the deck of a freighter 1,000 feet in front of us. We had a pretty good gun crew, because when we making those trips to North Africa, they sent us up on the east coast there a little ways, and we would have gunnery practice, and the planes would fly a sleeve by, and we'd shoot at it. And they got unhappy with us because every time they come by, we shot it down. They had to go back and get another one.
Let's get back to that American plane you shot down. Were you guys able to determine whether that was actually an American crew on that plane or that maybe it was Japanese soldiers who had stolen an American plane?
Well, the only thing that they could find out that there was no planes missing on any airstrips or aircraft carriers, and so they just were very sure then it was a stolen plane that they captured on one of the islands, and they came over and they couldn't identify themselves.
Well, and those must have been some tense moments because they had a chance to identify themselves, and I'm sure everybody on ship is hoping they will, because you don't want to be firing at a plane with American markings.
I was watching as it came over the land, and it got to the ships, and it got past a few of them, and still wouldn't identify themselves, and so that's when the ship took action, the forward guns, and before it got very far.
Airplanes, bombers, fighters, whatever, kamikazes, they weren't the only enemies you guys had or the only things you had to contend with. The weather was pretty fierce at times, too. How many typhoons did you make it through?
We had 2 typhoons. The ship was designed to go 45 degrees, and we were out there, and I had my life jacket on. I just sat up in front of the smokestack and held on and watching the water, and when it was rolling and you'd look down at the water and it would be close. And like I said before, it got real rough, because when you go to the top of the waves, I call them mountains, the props would come out of the water and make a noise, and then it'd go down and the bow would take on a load of water then. A couple of the ships stayed in anchor, but they got blew up on the beach.
Now, where were you while that typhoon's going on? Were you holding on to something, strapping yourself down? What was that like?
When we went to our bunks at night, they were metal pipe. We had a little mattress 2 inches thick, and then the bunk It had a rail about 6 inches above the main part of the body of it. We would stick our arms through there so we wouldn't go up and hit the bunk in front of us.
And what's going through your mind in a situation like that? I mean, you're literally hanging on for dear life, I suppose, but what are you thinking?
Well, I don't know. We were just holding on and saying, hey, this is quite a ride.
Yikes. Well, you're taking us on an entertaining ride back in time today, but it's break time again. You know, if you've ever eaten at Denny's on Blackstone and Divisadero in Fresno, or maybe you've played basketball at Fresno's Holmes Playground or Romaine Playground, you've benefited from some of Jim's work. We're going to hear about some of the other things he built after his Coast Guard days when Hometown Heroes continues next after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, cvhonorflight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.